The years started to go by. 5 years, people were still yelling, who are you going to call? And 10 years, and 15 years, and 20 years, and I'm seeing people dressed up in their jumpsuits and turning their cars into ectomobiles. That was really surprising.
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
All right, here we go, another episode of Story and Craft. Welcome back. Glad to have you. If this is your first time, of course, welcome. Appreciate you stopping by. Today, we are chatting with veteran actor Ernie Hudson. Over the last 50-plus years, he has been in just a ton of stuff. Most notably, probably to kids of the 80s like me, Ghostbusters, of course. He is in the NBC reboot of the show Quantum Leap. It just came out, so make sure to check that out. Great conversation with Ernie. I think you'll enjoy it quite a bit. Real quick, don't forget, if you would, make sure to follow and like Story and Craft on your podcast app. Leave a little review, if you would, Apple Podcasts or whatever app you choose. Of course, everything Story and Craft is at storyandcraftpod.com. So stop by, check it out. And right now, let's get after it. Today is Ernie Hudson Day right here on Story and Craft. So where are you joining me from today?
I'm in Lake Arrowhead, California.
Where is that exactly?
It's just above San Bernardino, about 100 miles east of Los Angeles, up in the mountains.
Oh, you know? Okay.
Yeah.
A little bit more scenic of an area than the greater Los Angeles area, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm in L.A. when I'm working, but when I'm not, I'm up here.
Has that been where you've been located for quite some time, or is this just kind of a new move for you?
Well, it's sort of a new move. We were here during the 80s up until about 2002, and then we moved off the mountain, moved to Minnesota for a while, but just came back up here about a year ago.
Going from Southern California weather to Minnesota has got to be a culture shock, at least a little bit.
Well, that's, you know, you marry someone and... you know, my wife said, wherever you go, I'll go. It's been the other way around. Wherever she goes, that's where I am. Her parents were in their 90s and needed her. And so that's where we were for about 6 years. They've transitioned on since. But
you say, you know, kind of the way it traditionally works, where you go, I go kind of a thing. And I live in New Orleans. I'm from Texas originally, but I live in New Orleans now, no longer married. But the rule is, if you marry somebody from New Orleans, you end up living in New Orleans at least for a period of time. And that's kind of the joke. It's rare. It's almost like this little tribe of expats. And you're like, wait, you're from somewhere else also? You must have married somebody. They're like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You got your MFA at Yale, correct?
Yeah, I went to Yale. I was there for a year. I didn't get the MFA, but I was a year in the drama school. Got married very early. I'm from Michigan and was having marital difficulties, left school, got possession of the kids, came out to California. I've been mostly based in Los Angeles because I've worked all over the years. But
so what was that like? I'm very curious. I was in a very similar situation. What is it like working, because the actor's life back in the day, you can't self-tape, you've got to go to auditions, and you're...
Yeah, yeah.
You had a couple of boys, I think, at that age, right?
Yeah, I have four sons, but my two older boys, it was just the three of us, and, as kids bring out the best in you, I think. I went to California as opposed to New York because I have a brother who... was in LA, and I knew he would always have my back, you know, in case, I needed someone to check on the kids. But the boys were really, they probably helped raise me as much as I raised them. So it was the three of us, and we, as they say, we got by.
Isn't that funny the way that works? You know, I saw a quote once that said, what kids don't realize, you don't realize is your parents are growing up with you at the same time.
Yeah, right. My oldest son was born when I was 19. I never had a dad or a mom. So it was kind of discovering that whole parental thing, sort of winging it. And It's, I always say it was the best thing that ever happened to me, but it also was very difficult at times.
I had a somewhat similar. Let's say I didn't have quite the modeling that you would, you know. June and Ward Cleaver, my parents were not. So it's kind of when you kind of have to get that, you register at a certain age, well, I got to kind of figure some things out on my own. And I think there's a kind of a liberty to that because you get to craft your own thing on your own terms and make your own mistakes and, you know, hopefully learn from them. But just kind of going to origin story, going, you said you're from Michigan. Or are you from around Detroit?
Well, the opposite side of the state. I'm from Benton Harbor, which is right on the coast of Lake Michigan, directly across from Chicago. Went to Detroit, went to college in Detroit, and kind of discovered theater in Detroit. So Detroit was really, really important. But that was after high school, getting married, and we decided to head to Detroit.
Well, was the theater thing part of your high school? Was that, were you in athletics, or was theater kind of this thing like, I'll try this out, why not?
You know, I grew up in this my grandmother who raised me was really religious, very much involved with the church. And I grew up in the church. People say, you know, you're from the hood. I go, no, it was school and church. I lived mostly at church. But, and I didn't play sports because the church didn't believe in sports. It was sort of against their rules. I took some acting or some theater classes a couple times in high school, but I really didn't discover theater until I got to Detroit and by accident stumbled into a theater and was just mesmerized by this production and just thought that it had to be the greatest thing in the world to be in theater.
You know, what was your trajectory like? Were you looking at people on film and TV and going, that's where I want to go, that's the end game? Or was it just, were you just a theater guy? It just happened into the on camera.
Yeah, well, you know, growing up, you watch TV, you think it would be something really very cool, but I didn't know any actors, so it was never a part of my psyche. Once I discovered theater, it was after having a family, trying every job possible, being very bad at everything, that by the time I walked on stage, I just felt at home, and I felt like this is something I can do. That was, and whatever it took to be good at it, and to be able to make a living, that's where I was. I just wanted to be a working actor. Didn't think too much about the whole star thing or, but I just wanted to be able to work.
My kids and I, by the way, and this is a little tiny bit of a spoiler for anybody that hasn't seen the most recent, the Ghostbusters Afterlife. You do show up in it. I was like, what a great thing it was to see you show up in that. I was like, that was just cool. But going back to the original Ghostbusters, leading up to that, you were kind of like what I consider to be one of my favorite people, which is just a working actor. Either I'd actually write this down: Fantasy Island, Black Sheep Squadron, Incredible Hulk, One Day at a Time, Too Close for Comfort, Different Strokes, A Little House on the Prairie, Bosom Buddies, you know, episode. That's like Murderer's Row of like what was going on back in the day. Were you that guy who was just getting one episodes on all these different shows, hustling?
Yeah.
If the timeline registers correctly, but when you got to Ghostbusters, that was a real big turning point for you. Is that correct?
Well, it should have been. I've always worked. And being a single dad, I'd go in. I had to get the job. I worked. I went from show to show. Ghostbusters came out. It was a huge hit. It did not change. Suddenly, I felt like I was blocked out for about 3 years. I couldn't get another film, but I did. I kept working TV.
Well, why do you think that was? Do you think it was because people were too closely identifying you with and the character? People said the name two different ways: Zedmore and Zeddemore.
Yeah,
the name of the character, right?
I say Zeddemore. So, I'm sure, you know, actors never know why they're working and never really know why they're not working. It might have been that they thought I was. I have no idea. I've heard that we thought you were a comedian or something. All I know is work dried up. And I've been working in film for about 8 years, you know, but that just shut everything down. And it took 3 years. I did Nick Nolte was doing a movie called Weeds, and I went in determined to get the job, and finally, and then I started working. I got 8 movies back to back, and Ghostbusters 2 came out, and the same thing happened for a couple of years, just shut out again.
What do you think it was that was working for you, mindset-wise? You know, because you were doing what I think is just I love actors that always show up doing different stuff. You always see them. Some of them you may not know their name, but they're always showing up. That transition when you started getting a lot more traction, was it a change in mindset? Was it just a change and just you had more on your resume? What do you think it was?
You know, I've never really seen the change. For me, it's always been pretty much the focus of... I had an instructor once who told me that I wouldn't get a job. So you never get a job because you're so good looking or because you're so friendly and people like you so much, or, you know, you have to show up and prove that you deserve the part. So I've always gone in and I've never had a part or felt like I had a part that was created just for me. I have friends who've had things that was written for them. I had to, if it had to be funny, I had to be funny. If it was dramatic, I had to make somebody cry. I had to do what the part, I had to tell the story. And I think I've never felt like I've made it to a certain place. I always knew I had to show up and convince whoever it was that I was, in fact, the best person for the job.
You know, that's such a great work ethic. Just, you know, it's so funny when you show up and the production's already in motion. You know, everybody has relationships built. And now you have to somehow integrate yourself into that ecosystem. Now, I know that with Ghostbusters, that Dan Aykroyd, I think he had originally written it for, it was Bill Murray and, I'm not Bill Murray, I'm sorry, it was originally written for
Jim
Murphy, I think. Eddie Murphy was the, I have to know, and I'll probably bounce in and out of this occasionally, but Harold Ramis kind of had this different vibe than everybody else. You know, Bill Murray was being Bill Murray, you know, and you had your vibe. Yeah. But Harold Ramis kind of had it. He was just a different vibe than wherever he showed up. I just always kind of watched him, and I didn't realize he also wrote and was also a creative guy. And Harold Ramis, what was it like just kind of creating it alongside what he was doing?
Well, Harold was always the go-to guy. Harold was the one that no matter what happened, you know, you could always go to Harold. He'd sort of explain things, especially for me, because those guys have been together for a number of years with Saturday Night Live. They had worked together on Second City. And I was kind of, and they came from improv. I'm an actor. But Harold was always the guy who would just sort of, you know, break things down and say, Ernie, it's, don't worry about it. There was a lot of just, you know, crazy stuff to adjust to, I'll put it that way.
You're on a set with guys who not only have had established, but they have like the whole Saturday Night Live thing. So this is like real deeply entrenched relationships. And did you ever feel like an odd man out or anything?
I felt that they were like family, which meant that sometimes they'd be at odds with each other. Sometimes, I mean, all that emotional stuff. And I'm just sort of fitting, finding, it was almost like visiting a family for dinner. And they're all, you know, used to eating, and you're sitting there trying to be polite and trying to figure out how do you fit in. Harold was always very inclusive. So, and it wasn't just to me. I think sometimes when Billy would get, things would be a little at odds, Harold was a guy who kept the ship afloat, you know. And Ivan was a director. Ivan was amazing. But Harold was always the peacemaker. He always kind of knew how to bring people together, and I always appreciated. Yeah, I used to watch Harold. I always say I owe a lot of my career to him, not because of Ghostbusters, but I would watch how he interacted with the crew, with people, and I thought, okay, that's professionalism. That's, you know, that's about the show as opposed to about the personality. It was pretty amazing. And a good human being, you know, just a good person.
Well, it's great you had him there, because I can imagine with the cast that's there, Ivan Reitman must have been like, you know, conducting a cat rodeo. I mean, like, because you got Bill Murray being Bill, you know, and Dan Aykroyd. And this originally was Dan Aykroyd's thing. Ghostbusters was his baby, but it got kind of rewritten to be turned into what it turned into.
Right.
Kind of going forward, there was a film. And I was speaking with a director a little while back who had directed Ray Liotta. And I spoke to somebody and acted with him. And I was like, the only time I interviewed him, I worked at ABC Radio as a young puppy, you know, host. And it was No Escape. And I cannot remember, not until I looked up your info, I was like, I couldn't remember the name of that movie I interviewed him for. Did you have that much time acting with Ray Liotta? I know we just lost him, but he seems like just a real cool guy. What was it like back in like, roughly 94 to act with him?
Yeah, no, we No Escape, me, Ray, Lance Hendrickson. It was great. I first worked with Ray back in, I think it was 78, maybe.
No,
a show
really?
Called, yeah, Crazy Times. And it was Ray Liotta, David Caruso, and Michael Paré were three kids from Rockaway Island. And I played a jazz singer who they would sort of come to and talk. I was there, the guy, when they had problems, I'd sort of advise him. It was a little movie, and that's where we first met. So we were friends for a long time, working together on No Escape. Ray was, you know, he was about the work, and he, you know, you work with some actors who are very, involved with it. Ray was focused. He was really focused on the work. He was a pro, you know, completely. And he, I always like it when actors, you know, they're secure enough to where you don't have to try to accommodate them. You know, you can just focus on your job because they are doing theirs, and they bring their best, and it demands that you bring your best. So, we've always got along very, very well.
I was speaking with the director Ariel Vroman, and he had directed him in The Iceman. And he had cast him. Actually, there's another film coming out about 1992 after the Rodney King verdict. And he said that, you know, he kind of tests you a little bit, but he just is the nicest guy. He's one of the guys I wanted to talk to again. But going forward, I mean, what is it that, you know, your focus, film or TV, has there ever been a focus in your mind or just wherever the work is?
Well, I've always prided myself on it didn't matter where the work was, it'd be a theater. I just felt you have to be prepared for, you know, animation, voiceover, whatever. You know, I'm ready to go to work. But as I've gotten older, I've been doing this now for 55 years, and you know, I'm more interested in working with people who are really interested in working with me. I don't audition anymore. I don't. You know, I'm not out looking for a job to pay the bills. The bills are paid, thank God. And looking for those fun. I love characters that are a little bit different, that introduce something to you that you haven't done before. But I really appreciate people. I'm doing a show now called Quantum Leap for NBC. And I love that show and I love being a part of it. But what I really appreciated is they came to me and said, hey, we really love your work and we'd like you to be a part of it. That goes a long way with me. If I got to beg you for a job, I just don't want to do that anymore.
And that's one of the things I saw. You're going to be in Quantum Leap. I was like, what a cool show to bring back. Is it structurally going to be the same as before, or is it more of a reimagined version of it?
Well, it's more of an updated, it takes place, 30 years. That was done in the 90s, so we're in the 20s, so it's modern day, and it's based on the original, so paying homage and respect to that one, but, you know, it's in the same world, in the same universe. It's just here we are now, you know, X number of years later. And the show is similar, but there are obviously some modern changes. I think the fans who love that show will love what we're doing with it now.
It's one of those ones, I think, why haven't they rebooted the show yet? You know, it has such a cool premise to it, because it seems like now, if you're for somebody like me as a kid of the 80s, I don't remember being a kid of the 80s and seeing them reboot stuff from the 50s, 60s, 70s, but man, all the stuff from the 80s and 90s is showing up, and you know, it's kind of cool because they got the special effects that they can do now that they couldn't do back then. But real quick, I was going to ask you mentioned you had your sons. Did any of your sons go into writing, acting, anything? Did they follow dad's lead at all?
Well, My oldest son, he was acting for a while. In fact, he did a season of Oz. I did this HBO series Oz. We did a number of movies together. I think he was in Candyman, and you know, so he was working a bit. He got into corporate work, so now that's kind of you know what he does. He has produced some films, but not doing the acting anymore. My second son is a musician, still you know doing his thing. My third son is a writer, still waiting to land something significant. But and my youngest son is a watchmaker.
Really?
Who? Yeah, we have this love of watches, and so they're all pretty amazing. Nobody wanted to be just an actor. But except my oldest son, like I said, he did. He was acting for a while.
Now you mentioned Oz, and I have to admit, there's so much great stuff out there. I haven't watched yet. I saw a couple of episodes of it, but it's one of those things. There's so much compared to a couple decades ago that's available. I'm like,
yeah.
Well, that's going to be a weekend of binging for me at some point in time, you know. But yeah. I know Oz is really just everybody on that show. Really, it's just you had a lot of great acting. The episodes I watched it seemed like it'd be a very intense show. What was it like shooting that?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I was the warden. I remember, you know, I'd come to the set, greet everybody. Everybody's friendly. It's all open and fun. And then I'd go in and dress on my suit and always shine my shoes. And by the time I come out in character, nobody would speak to me. It was, but it was a great group of actors. I think the best cast I've probably ever worked with. I mean, these guys, and everybody was there to bring their best. So it was just a wonderful time. Tom Fontana, who his company, Barry Levinson, they do City on a Hill. I just did a recurring thing for that show recently. So it was great to be back and work with him. But it was just a great show, great group of actors, a lot of guys, J.K. Simmons, just a lot of guys came out of that and are doing Chris Maloney. It was just a good group of people.
That is such, it is an amazing cast.
Yeah.
You mentioned something a moment ago, reminds me of something that I believe it was Tom Hanks said, that before he fully feels in the character, it's when he puts the shoes on. That's just for him, that's what it is. Yeah. What is it like for you before you really feel, I'm a big fan of, I do a lot of voiceover, but I always kind of really, even in my head, imagination-wise, think wardrobe, because you carry yourself differently, you know. What is it for you before you're fully dialed into a character? Is it wardrobe? Is it the set? What is it for you?
Yeah, it's it changes. You know, sometimes it's a wardrobe. You know, sometimes it's something that informs you. Sometimes it's the set. It's the surroundings. Sometimes it's acting is believing. So however I can get to that place where I really believe this story, this person, this situation, this is truly where I am. Sometimes you can read a script and you just know. And sometimes it seems like it just takes forever to try to sink into something. So it changes. But wardrobe is certainly a real important part of it.
Well, as far as what you've done, all the projects you've worked on, what's the one you probably identified the closest with that maybe, you know, even when you were done filming, it'd be a show or a movie. What kind of stuck with you? What role was really resonant?
Well, like I said, I just love working, so they all have special meaning. There's certain ones. I was talking to someone recently about The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. I love that character because he was, I always said he was sort of the best part of who I am. But, obviously the Ghostbuster character, I love the fact that families sort of, you know, respond to it. Congo was a lot of fun because it reminded me so much of the movies I watched as a kid and that character being the safari leader. Grace and Frankie, I felt, was probably closer to me as a person. But so they're all a little bit, a little bit different. You hope they are. You know, now maybe I'm not sure how, sometimes it's very subtle how much people see, but for me, they're all a little bit different.
What do people mostly, is it really generational? Whenever they meet you, it's like, oh, Ghostbusters or Oz, or what are people usually mostly identifying you with?
Well, you know, it's I've been fortunate that my work sort of appealed to different audiences. So different people will come. Older people, women will come up and say, remember The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, because it had to do, I think, with children or whatever. Obviously, the Ghostbusters, not just with kids who saw it first time in the movie theater, but now their kids and their grandkids are being introduced to the movie, and those kids love it. So it's something that families sort of, enjoy together. Grace and Frankie again, middle-aged women responded very much to that character. I do a show called Family Business on BET. There's an inner city audience that loves that show and that character, and sort of, so The Crow, a lot of kids who are going through their teenage angst respond to that character. It kind of depends on, but they come for a variety of reasons, but over and above probably Ghostbusters more than, but all the other ones, someone will come up and bring up something that I've almost forgotten I did.
It must be a great career. We're like, oh yeah, I did do that, didn't I?
Yeah, no, I had almost an argument with the guy. He was saying, yeah, I saw you in this movie. He said, no, it wasn't me. And then he started describing the character, and I'm like, oh my God, I did do that. So, it's been, like I said, it's been over 50 years. So,
yeah. Well, it's funny, without mentioning numbers, I noticed you're actually a little older than Bill Murray, but you look exponentially younger than Bill Murray. And I've got to know, has fitness and, just taking care of yourself just been part of the program over the years? Or, because it's like, I'm sitting there going, this guy looks like, I got to get to the gym, because you're like, making me feel bad about like how lazy I've been.
Well, I never really got much into a lot of working out. I just think you got to be aware. So never let the weight get too far out of control, because once it does, it's so hard to get back. Watching the vital signs, making sure your blood pressure and all those things stay. I've gone through two bouts of cancer, and thankfully
really?
I'm cancer free. Yeah, but and try not to stress over stuff, and I've been in a relationship, my wife and I've been together for 46 years. And I really believe, I'm not a religious person. My grandmother was, but I do believe in universal divine guidance. I believe in God, whatever that, I don't believe anybody telling me what that is, but, so I've been very, very blessed. And I just trust. I've never trusted, my grandmother would say, put not your trust in man, but that the universe hears and will respond to you. So I've always trusted that things will come, and not necessarily from where and the people I think they will. But I've always known that if I ask, it would be given.
I very closely identify with that idea. I think that it's no matter what faith somebody's brought up in, there's a moment when they decide, man, I'm going to buy in 100%. Or this, they become curious and they start exploring and they start, they're not as much trying to put labels on things. How do you define this? What do you call it? Which living in America in 2022 is kind of an interesting time because you got a little tug of war going on there.
Yeah.
But I think it's about energy you put out in the world, how you feel, just being, I was speaking with somebody the other day. They said the first thing they do when they wake up in the morning is meditate. I think I should do that, but knowing me, I just fall right back to sleep. I think. Well, actually, just one other question about Ghostbusters. When you were doing that, did you have a sense that it was going to be what it turned into? Did you have a sense, okay, this is going to be a big movie? What did you feel like when you're making the film? Did you know this was something special?
Yeah, I mean, I knew that it would be. Back in the 80s, a movie would come out. Hopefully it was in the top 10. If it's number one, it'll last for a few weeks, and then something else will come along and replace it, and that's how things went. But I knew it would be number one. How long it lasted, but when it just stayed at the top, week after week after week, that was surprising. And then after the years started to go by, 5 years, people were still yelling, who are you going to call in 10 years, in 15 years, in 20 years? And I'm seeing people dressed up in their jumpsuits and turning their cars into ectomobiles. That was really surprising. And then 30 years and their Ghostbuster chapters all over the world. That part I could never imagine. The fact that it's sustained in the way that it has, I knew it would be a big movie, but I didn't realize that it would become what it has become.
I mean, the marketing, it took a page right out of Star Wars. I mean, there was literally food and toys and everything. It was just like one of those things that how did you, I'd say young actor, I mean, you were in your 30s, I guess, when you made that.
Yeah, probably close to 40. I mean, I was well into my 30s when we did it, yeah.
But it had to have been kind of a heady thing for you to have everybody know who you were. Suddenly, you know.
Well, I used to tell a joke back then. I came to Hollywood to be rich and famous. I never realized you could be poor and popular. So when Ghostbusters came out, it was huge. But of course, I didn't get paid the kind of money that a lot of people were paid. So it didn't change my life in terms of money. But people were coming to my front door, and so that was a little surprising and unsettling, and
You know, you're mentioning that it just kind of follows the decades. You know, it's just showing up with different generations, and Stranger Things really kind of leaned in the early, you know, because that with my kids is real popular now. But for me growing up in the 80s, I don't know how these two guys that are much younger than me, the producer, the Duffer Brothers, hit the nail on the head so well on the vibe of the 80s. But what was it like when you saw that? I don't know if you had, I'm assuming you had seen it, and then they really leaned in on the Ghostbusters thing as far as being a big cultural note of the 80s. Was that kind of, is this still kind of cool for you to see that it still is resonating?
Yeah, to see people, shows. I've done a number of shows where they wanted me to do something to throw a line in, or, you know, the show I do, Family Business, there's a line where, I'm the original Ghostbuster. I mean, somehow it, the young man, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but on Stranger Things, the black kid who they dress up, and I think there's in this show, they expect him to be Winston Zeddemore, and he says, "Why do I have to be Winston Zeddemore? I want to be something else." So when I met him, and he came up, and he just apologized. He said, "I'm so sorry. It wasn't me. It was like they just wrote it that way." And I'm like, "Dude, it's okay. It's all right. You know, it's not personal." But yeah, no, I think it's great that people, you know, still love the movie. And. And Bill Murray, I mean, he's a genius, and that was Bill Murray at his best, so.
Yeah, I heard something that it was a little, they weren't sure if he was even going to show up to film necessarily, because you know, even now, if you want to cast him, he's got his 1-800 number, you leave a voicemail, and they said he's always been very, I don't know if flighty's not the word, but he's got his Bill Murray way of doing things. But they said day of, showed up, 8 a.m., he was there on set, ready to go.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Now, improvisation-wise, where you said that you came from an acting tradition, they're more improv.
Right.
What was it like when you see Bill Murray just riffing, and you got to go, I got to keep up with this, or what was that like for you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, of course, coming up in theater and in college, you do a little bit of all of it. Like I said, I believe in pride myself on being prepared for whatever comes out. But yeah, if you learn your lines, you expect the guy to say the exact line that you've studied. So you've got to be flexible. And I think surviving, especially in this business, you need to be able to go with the flow. And It was fun. I did a movie called Airheads, and Chris Farley, and the director had this scene where we were just to riff, and sometimes you're in the moment, and sometimes it just doesn't come. And me and Chris was kind of going at it, and then he kind of looked at me like, "Ernie, come on, you know, sometimes you're there, and you know, sometimes you're not." But it's always fun to see these really creative people at their best.
Do you ever just kind of switch accidentally into observer mode and watching them do their thing and really like, well, that's kind of funny, you know?
I like to kind of, I'm going to be there, and if I need to take the lead, I will. I'd like to run together, but sometimes someone will take off and you kind of go, okay, oh, this is, you know, it takes a moment to, you know, this is where we're going. Let's go with it. But it's always fun. It's always fun when people show up whatever that is, but they're showing up with their best, and we can play.
Yeah, that's when I teach voiceover, and I'm like, that's when I said, you got to play. You got to be okay making mistakes, just kind of get into it and just go, you know, don't be so self-conscious. Well, one of the last questions I got for you, you know, I do notice you've done a lot of voiceover, actually, in animation. Is it something that is kind of equally fun for you as being on
camera? Yeah, no, I'd love to do more of it. I think, a couple animated series of superheroes back in the 80s. Ghostbusters came up, and for whatever reason, they said it was because I was doing another movie, but I didn't do the animated Ghostbusters series, which was very annoying to me. But I was doing a lot of work, and then I moved to the mountains, and I didn't want to travel to audition. Now, of course, you can do a lot of stuff at home. You can audition from your own house. But back in those days, you had to go in. And so I stopped doing it for a number of years. I think lost those contacts. But I get asked to do, you know, and I enjoy it. It's just that I don't, again, go out looking for, sometimes I'll get auditions and I honestly don't have time to deal with it. So, you know, it's not like, but if, yeah, once again, if someone likes my work and want to work with me, I'm not hard to find.
Now, when you do the VO, are you doing it from home or are you, since you are a bit out of LA, or do you go to like, a local studio?
Normally I'll go to a local studio. I have a little setup at the house, but, actually I'm getting, one of those sound, whisper rooms, but, yeah, creating maybe something to do more of it, but it's once again, I'm just focused. I'm doing a couple of series right now. I just finished shooting three movies back to back. It's not at the top of my priority, but
now when you're not doing what you're doing, like you said, you just wrapped up three films. What are you doing to kind of passing the time is not a good way to put it. How are you occupying your time doing the things you really want to do? What are you up to?
Well, you know. We're trying, my wife and I are trying to settle into the perfect home. We were actually looking to buy. Now with the interest rates, the changes, we're sort of waiting a few months and seeing how this is all going to settle out. But it's so much work to do around the house. You know, the property is always something to be done. Just trying to learn how to relax and take it easy.
Yeah, and in shopping for a house right now was not a very relaxing thing. I stopped as well because I was looking at a house getting built, and the guy's like, "Okay, we're taking bids." I said, "You're taking bids? What do you mean?" It's like, "Yeah." It's like, "Well, how much are you asking?" "Well, it depends how much you're offering." It's like, "Oh, I'm going to hold off on buying a home real quick." But
yeah.
Well, tell you what I want to do. I have my seven questions. Kind of a fun thing I do with everybody. First question I always ask everybody is, "What's your favorite comfort food? That thing that you really look forward to." It may not be the healthiest thing. It may be healthy, but something you really look forward to just sitting down and relaxing with.
I love salmon. I know that's probably a strange answer, but salmon, maybe I was a bear at one
time.
Now,
do you like cured salmon, like lox, that kind of salmon, or are you more like grilled salmon kind of?
More like grilled, but I like salmon in all its various forms. Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Now, if you were to sit down, next question, three people, going to have a cup of coffee, talk story for a few hours, three people that you would love to sit down with, living or not, actually, who would you like to sit down and chat with?
Tom Hanks, I worked with years ago on a show called Bosom Buddies. I'd love to just sit and have a conversation with Tom. Denzel.
Well, you were on Bosom Buddies? How did I miss that?
It was. We've been friends ever since, haven't worked together since, but it was a great, a fun show. In fact, Donna Dixon, Danny Aykroyd's wife, we met there before I actually met Danny Aykroyd. Denzel, I've really grown to admire his career. I'd love to sort of, you know, I see him from time to time, but not on a regular basis. And who else would I, I like Jeff Bridges. Jeff is... his brother, Bo, is one of my best friends, but I really admire Jeff's career and how he's managed to stay relevant all these many years.
Yeah, I think both of them are. It's so funny because Bo is really the one who started with acting first, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And I had an opportunity. This is going back 18 years ago. He was going to be filming without going into the weeds, but he's going to be filming something, and they're casting somebody to play his son, or he has a few sons.
Right.
This is my first experience of something getting so close, and then he got a TV show. Of course, he was the big name on the on the call list, so the whole project fell apart. I was like, I really wanted to act with Beau Bridges. That would have been wonderful. But so those three guys, I think that would be fantastic. Now, I do want to go hit rewind. When you were a kid, who was your first celebrity crush? First one you saw, like, oh my God, movie star, whoever.
Loretta Young. In fact, I was so small, I didn't even know what a crush was. I just knew that I was mesmerized by her and that staircase she'd walk down. It's like, she was stunning. I don't know what she'd look like if I saw a picture of her now, but I was really impressed with Loretta Young.
There's something about old Hollywood. There's just something about black and white, I don't know.
It was grand, she was
exactly.
Yeah, from another world.
Now, next question. If you're going to be forced to live on an exotic island, not forced, but beautiful exotic island, it's not uncomfortable living, but you don't have internet, you have no streaming, you can only bring one DVD of a movie and one album with you. And you can also throw in a book if you'd like. Some people are more into books. But what would you bring with you to that island for a year?
Oh, geez. For a year. Wow. geez, that's kind of interesting. I don't know. I'd have to think about that one. I don't know. I don't know why The Godfather comes to mind, but somehow maybe because it was fun. A book. The Invisible Man has always been fun to kind of go back. Or there's a if it was a book, it would be a book called A Course in Miracles, which I've always found fascinating for the past 30 or 40 years. What was the other book? A soundtrack.
Or a soundtrack or any kind of album.
I don't know. Something from probably Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On album. I'm not sure why. I don't know. Because I've gotten past making decisions that happen. It would be to, to my wife going, honey, what do you think I should,
It was liberating. I just took my three teenagers on a cruise a few weeks ago, and it was so liberating for me. Single dad, three kids going, what are we doing, day? Whatever y'all want to do, I ain't making the decisions here. And I think they dug it, but it was so relaxing for me. I didn't have to actually be accountable for any decisions for what I ate that night.
I took my family on a cruise, and it was miserable because you don't want to be the only celebrity on a boat that people are trapped in. I could not leave the cabin. I mean, people swarmed. We went to dinner. Oh my God. It was awful. I mean, 7 days of,
You gotta be honest. Have you ever done anything because you do want to float about, go to, I don't know, Trader Joe's or something. I don't want to say costume, but have you ever done anything so that you would not be so recognizable?
No, I've thought about it, but, no, I try to, cause then I feel like I'm a prisoner. I mean, if I get to a point where I got to hide to go out, I mean, normally speaking, it's not a problem, but I think because we're on a boat and that's it. It was a little difficult, but no, I try not to. I've had situations. My wife and I, 40th anniversary, a lady came up and sat down, would not leave. Just felt like she said, you owe me because I'm your fan and you have a say. So people can take things a little bit crazy, but generally speaking, though, people are great and it's not a problem.
Now, if you were to define, what is the definition? If I could call a perfect day from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed, what kind of component things would you like to be part of that? Having some salmon in there somewhere, I'm sure. But how would you define your perfect day?
Yeah, perfect day would be nothing to sort of stress over. Knowing work was coming up soon, so I'd have to think about that. The weather's great, and the kids are fine, and a day just at peace, I'm in a beautiful setting. The scenery is beautiful, and you can just let go. A perfect day is being able to let go. And
I like that. You know, that makes more sense to me. I've heard a lot of people answer it different ways. It's like that I get it. You know, where you can just not have to be looking at your calendar, what you got to do all that day. Just kind of like just be.
Yes, just be.
Now, last couple of questions here. If you were if you weren't doing what you're doing now, or if you hadn't been an actor and hadn't, you know, been a creative, what would you be? What would you want to be doing for a living, or what would be the second choice?
Well, I thought I would want to be an architect. I've tried designing some houses that we had planned to build that never got built, but maybe something in design. You know, I started out thinking of myself as a writer. I ended up acting became sort of the, you know, what I fell back on. Singing was something that I fantasized as a kid. But if it was something out of entertainment, it would probably be maybe something in drawing, architecture, or something like that.
Now, last question. If you had a DeLorean, you could jump in, and you're going to go back to when you were 16 years old, and you have a piece of advice, guidance, something to get you on a different rail, either make your life better at the moment, or you know it puts you on a better trajectory. What would that piece of advice be to 16-year-old you?
Just really, I always prided myself on that I trust, I know things will work out, but I always felt like I had to really work hard. I'm sure that was a good thing, but I think just to let myself know that it's going to be okay. You know what I mean? Because there were times when things were right against the wall and you didn't know what was going to happen. I always call that going through the fire. You got to go through it to get to the other side, but it's a little frightening. And there was something I could say to myself that, you know, just trust. You're going to be just fine. You're going to be fine.
It's so funny. It's the same thing. Sometimes you have to tell yourself that nowadays, occasionally.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things I told I was talking with my kids. I said it sometimes, You just don't have enough years on earth yet to realize this too shall pass. Everything's transient.
Right. Yeah.
And it's hard, but you really need to know that when you're younger, because that's when everything seems bigger, more vibrant, more,
right.
You know, it's the end of the world, you know, but that's wonderful. And that's something I still to this day have to tell myself occasionally.
Sure.
But I tell you what, I so appreciate it. You're so generous with your time. I appreciate it more than you know. But you have yourself a great one. Again, thank you.
And you too, Mark.
Hopefully we'll catch up down the line, my friend.
All right, take care. I look forward to it, man.
All right, there you go, Mr. Ernie Hudson. What a pleasure it was to sit down and chat with him. A trip down memory lane, Ghostbusters, and everything else he's been working on. But, I mean, I'm a kid of the 80s, so Ghostbusters. That was cool. Don't forget, the NBC reboot of Quantum Leap is now on, so check it out. Another trip down memory lane for us 80s kids. Don't forget the website, storyandcraftpod.com. Once again, storyandcraftpod.com. Stop by, check out everything about the show, shoot me a note if you would like. Also, if you would, make sure to follow and like the show on your favorite podcast app. That way you won't miss an episode. You'll get a notification every time a new episode comes out. All right, there you go. Thank you so much for stopping by again. Another great episode next week. In the meantime, have a great rest of your week or weekend or heck, whatever you're up to. Enjoy it, be safe, and I'll see you next time right here on Story and Craft.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. Please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story. Come on.